Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. Today we open our show with controversies involving three of East County's most prominent politicians. Congressman Duncan Hunter and his wife have pled not guilty to federal corruption charges in a 48-page indictment, and we'll have details. State Senator Joel Anderson, who is running for the State Board of Equalization, is accused by a female lobbyist of repeatedly threatening to hit her during an altercation in a restaurant that was witnessed by several others. And in El Cajon, embattled Councilman Ben Colasso has left the Democratic Party and tried to register with a third party that doesn't exist in California, so he's now a candidate running without a party. The state is proposing to release a serial rapist in rural Jacumba. We'll tell you how you can submit comments to the court before it makes a decision on his placement. On our weather report, hear just how hot it's been this summer, with many all-time records broken here in San Diego County. On People Power, we'll have a heartwarming update on the overwhelming community turnout for a fundraiser to help survivors of the West Fire in Alpine. Photographers, listen up for details today on the Anza Borrego Desert Photo Contest. And in Descanso, we'll have news on the identities of two people killed aboard a small plane crash last week. The county has issued a warning for bird owners to watch out for symptoms of virulent Newcastle disease, which has recently been found in backyard birds in several Southern California counties. This deadly and incurable bird disease has caused millions of bird deaths in California in the past. So if you're a bird owner, find out how to protect your flocks on today's show. On Destination East County, hear about all the top festivals and events coming up across our region, from powwows and grape stomps to concerts and a deep pit barbecue in Descanso for some end-of-summer fun. From Public News Service, get the latest on a net neutrality bill moving through the state legislature. And then we'll end our show today with two of our Best of East County episodes, an interview with Alan Mindel, author of The Closer, a baseball novel, and we'll take you on the road to Julian for some champion fiddle competition music. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. Congressman Duncan Hunter Jr. and his wife, Margaret, pled not guilty on Thursday after being indicted on federal corruption charges. They are accused of conspiring to commit wire fraud and falsifying campaign records to steal over $250,000 in campaign funds, used for personal expenses, according to the U.S. Attorney's Office. The indictment alleges that the Hunters also falsely represented personal expenses on purchases made to help wounded veterans and other charitable causes. For example, prosecutors say that Margaret Hunter advised her husband to buy shorts at a golf store so the purchases could be written off as golf balls to benefit a wounded veteran's charity. In addition, a letter from Hunter's attorney to the Justice Department reveals prosecutors allege that campaign funds were spent on extramarital infidelities and excessive drinking. Hunter and his wife arrived separately at the courthouse, passing crowds of protesters chanting, "Lock them up," but they stood together before Judge William Gallo to enter their not guilty pleas. They were released on bond after their attorney noted that they have virtually no substantial assets left and would pose a low risk of flight. Due to the felony charges, the congressman, an avid hunter, was also asked to turn in his guns. House Speaker Paul Ryan issued an announcement calling the charges against Congressman Hunter, quote, deeply serious, adding that Hunter has been removed from his committee assignments due to the indictments. Hunter has issued a statement calling the action politically motivated and objecting to the timing of the indictment just months before the November election. He says he has not been asked by investigators to answer questions, adding, "I have not had one opportunity to present my side of anything in this investigation or to counter any allegations against me. All the while, there has been a constant barrage of misinformation and salacious headlines in our media regarding this matter." Hunter says he chose to remain silent rather than feed into what he calls a witch hunt, and he has said he will not resign. I have focused on one thing, doing the job which I was elected to do, he says. I have worked to represent my constituents, voting on policy issues that I believe would benefit our nation and opposing those that would do us harm. And, he adds, these efforts will not stop, and I am not going anywhere. The 48-page indictment details scores of instances from 2009 through 2016. Prosecutors say the Hunters illegally used campaign funds to pay for personal expenses that they could not otherwise afford at a time when their personal accounts were overextended. Those purchases included family vacations to Italy, Hawaii, Phoenix, Arizona, and Boise, Idaho, school tuition for their children, dental work, theater tickets, and domestic and international travel for almost a dozen of their relatives. The Hunters also spent tens of thousands of dollars on smaller purchases, including fast food, movie tickets, golf outings, video games, groceries, home utilities, and expensive meals out. To conceal their personal spending, prosecutors allege that the Hunters mischaracterized the purchases in Federal Elections Commission's or FEC filings as campaign travel, dinner with volunteers or contributors, toy drives, teacher, parent, and supporter events, gift cards for charitable donations, and gift basket items, among other things. All false. Prosecutors contend that family dental bills paid with campaign funds were characterized as a charitable contribution to Smiles for Life. Theater tickets were mischaracterized as holiday gift certificates, and tickets for the family to see Riverdance at the San Diego Civic Theater became San Diego Civic Center for Republican Women Federated Fundraising. To disguise their children's tuition payments to Christian Unified Schools in El Cajon, the Hunters provided a number of conflicting explanations, including that the payments were charitable contributions, the U.S. attorney reports. The Hunters' alleged improper use of campaign funds for personal expenses occurred despite many warnings about the prohibition against using campaign funds for personal expenses and repeated inquiries from Duncan Hunter's campaign treasurer about these questionable purchases. According to the indictment, the Hunters knew that many of their desired purchases could only be made by using campaign funds since they didn't have enough personal funds left to pay for those purchases. U.S. Attorney Adam Braverman says the indictment alleges that Congressman Hunter and his wife repeatedly dipped into campaign coffers as if they were personal bank accounts and falsified FEC campaign finance reports to cover their tracks. Elected representatives should jealously guard the public's trust, not abuse their positions for personal gain. And the U.S. attorney adds, the indictment is a reminder that no one is above the law. Hunter's attorney, Gregory Vega, in a letter to Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein on August 6th, claimed the investigation was biased and stated that two prosecutors attended a fundraiser for Hillary Clinton, although they did not purchase tickets nor did they donate to her campaign. The Secret Service has said the prosecutors were asked to attend the event for security purposes. Vega had asked that the indictment be postponed for an impartial review. He also objected to, quote, personal indiscretions of the congressman that the prosecutors seem intent on charging, adding that prosecutors said they have pictures to prove it, purportedly to show that the congressman was spending campaign funds for affairs and excessive drinking. Hunter's lawyer acknowledges, while there may be evidence of infidelity, irresponsibility, or alcohol dependence, once properly understood, the underlying facts do not equate to criminal activity. These allegations are, however, intended to embarrass and humiliate the congressman shortly before a crucial election and also to alienate him from his wife, the only other person under investigation, and his intended co-defendant. The Justice Department rejected Vega's requests. Hunter's political opponent, Democrat Amar Campanijar, says of Hunter's indictment, the division, chaos, and corruption in Washington has gone too far, adding that the indictment confirms just how deep this corruption can reach when someone like Duncan Hunter Jr. is in it for himself instead of representing the people. Now is the time to put country over party and rise against this corruption and rise above the divisive politics, says Campanijar, who says he wants to bring real change and fresh thinking to represent the people of the 50th Congressional District. Campanijar, a Catholic of Mexican-American and Palestinian descent, has worked in the Obama administration's Labor Department and for the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. He has been actively campaigning and even before the indictment raised more money than Hunter, although the district has a heavy Republican registration advantage. There is no mechanism for Republicans to replace Hunter on the ballot, even if he were to withdraw from the race or resign. A trial would likely take months, raising the prospect of voters forced to foot the bill for a special election to replace Hunter in Congress if he is reelected and then convicted on felony charges, which could result in many years of imprisonment. Under California's top two primary system, only two names are on the November ballot in the 50th Congressional District, Hunter and Campanijar. Noah Bookbinder, Executive Director of Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, or CREW, a nonprofit government watchdog group, has called on Hunter to resign. CREW filed complaints against Hunter for spending campaign funds on personal use back in 2016. The ethics expert from CREW adds, "We are glad to see Congressman Hunter will finally be forced to face the consequences for executing one of the most breathtaking and egregious congressional spending scandals in recent history." The indictment of Congressman Hunter, a strong supporter of President Donald Trump, came on the same day as the conviction of the president's campaign chair, Paul Manafort, on 8 felony counts, and the same day that Trump's personal lawyer, Michael Cohen, pled guilty to 8 counts related to paying hush money to a porn star. Cohen has said that Trump knew about the payoffs and that they were done for the purpose of influencing the election. CREW's spokesman calls the Hunter, Manafort, and Cohen cases the latest evidence of a crisis of ethics that is gripping Washington. And he concludes, "Rigorous enforcement of the law is the first step to restoring trust and ethics in our government." This is Miriam Raftery, reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ.
Republican State Senator Joel Anderson is under a legislative investigation after being accused of threatening to assault a female lobbyist. Stephanie Robertson, with the California Nurses Association, has filed a complaint with the Senate Rules Committee. Another lobbyist, who witnessed the incident at the Diplomat Steakhouse in Sacramento, says Anderson approached Robertson to complain that her union didn't endorse him, made harassing comments about her appearance, and then stated, "You better shut up before I bitch slap you." The witness said Anderson repeated his threat several times. The Los Angeles Times reports that a restaurant spokesperson, Patrick Harbison, confirms that a male patron threatened to strike a female patron, adding that the threat was observed by restaurant staff who intervened and escorted the man outside. Two other witnesses who requested anonymity told the Los Angeles Times that they saw Anderson removed by the restaurant staff. Senator Anderson, who is running for the Board of Equalization, released a statement which reads, "I have the utmost respect for Stephanie, and I sincerely regret my word choice that was not directed at her," Anderson said. "I welcome the Rules Committee investigation to clear up this misunderstanding." Bonnie Castillo, Executive Director of the California Nurses Association, has called on Anderson to resign and to end his campaign for the Board of Equalization. She calls his actions outrageous and unacceptable, adding, "No one should ever be subject to sexual harassment or threats of violence in the Capitol or anywhere else in our society." Since last fall, 3 state legislators have resigned over accusations of sexual harassment, and a 4th facing sexual harassment allegations stepped down, citing health reasons. The Legislative Women's Caucus issued a statement calling for a full investigation into allegations the group called deeply disturbing. Senate Republican leader Patricia Bates has declined comment pending the outcome of the Rules Committee investigation. Anderson's district includes most of San Diego's East County, where he served as assembly member before being elected to the state Senate. He has previously indicated he may run for the Board of Supervisors seat to be vacated by Supervisor Diane Jacob due to term limits. Supervisor Jacob, a Republican, issued a blistering criticism of 3 high-profile local politicians embroiled in ethics scandals. Quote, "It's been a tough time for East County, with 3 elected officials at the federal, state, and local levels violating the public's trust," Jacob posted on Twitter, adding, "If criminal charges against Congressman Hunter are true, he must resign. At the very least, voters must hold him accountable in November, just as they should with State Senator Anderson and El Cajon Councilman Colosio, who have embarrassed themselves and failed those they were elected to serve. As Ronald Reagan reminded us," Supervisor Jacob concluded, "character matters." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
El Cajon Councilman Ben Colosio is a man without a party. He tried to re-register as a member of the Federalist Party earlier this month, the San Diego Union-Tribune reports. However, the Federalist Party is not recognized in California, so Colosio is now officially a declined-to-state party affiliation voter. Originally the party of founding fathers Alexander Hamilton and John Adams, the Federalist Party advocated for a strong federal government but it dissolved in the 1820s. In 2016, a new Federalist Party formed with a polar opposite view, touting smaller government. Kalasha won office in 2016 with the endorsement of the Democratic Party, running as a Democrat. But after allegations against Kalasha, including sexual harassment, fraud, defamation, and threatening a reporter with an attack dog became public, as well as Kalasha's prior guilty plea to workers' compensation fraud, numerous members of the public have denounced Kalasha at council meetings and called for his resignation. When Union Tribune reporter Karen Perlman asked Kalasha for comments on the public testimony, he fired back an insulting text message, refusing to be interviewed. He then leveled a savage assault on media, accusing Perlman, as well as our own editor Miriam Raftery and our reporter Paul Cruz, as being a bunch of dishonest, cult-like figures who push a radical agenda aimed at moving this country in a socialist direction. He claimed that Perlman lied in prior coverage, but he didn't specify anything she actually got wrong. And then he added, "You and fake journalists, like you, are a cancer to this great nation." Prompting at least one response on Perlman's Facebook page from someone thanking her for being a cancer and reporting on Kalasha's antics. Kalasha falsely claimed to have more followers on Facebook than the Union Tribune. According to Facebook, the newspaper has 189,784 people following it. Ben Kalasha for City Council has just 21 followers. In addition, he's called East County Magazine non-existent. However, we average between 6 and 7 million hits a month and a quarter of a million visits. He ended his diatribe against Perlman by stating, "I look forward to using the UT story as a pee-pee pad for my new pet rabbit." And then he added the hashtag, "America First." The slogan "America First" has long been used by the Ku Klux Klan, including on coins minted by the racist hate group. Critics of Kalasha at the last city council meeting ranged from conservative Republicans Jim Kelly and Gary Woods, both trustees on the Grossmont Union High School District Board, to members of the East County Progressive Democratic Club, including James Elia, the Democratic nominee running for assembly. But Kalasha wasn't there to hear it. It's unclear just why he was absent, although Mark Lane, an activist with a federal lawsuit against Kalasha for suppressing free speech by deleting followers he doesn't like on social media, has suggested that Kalasha was dodging a process server. Kalasha is running against Councilman Gary Kendrick for a council seat in a newly created Fletcher Hills district, but he would still keep his current seat through 2020 even if he loses due to a quirk of the redistricting process in El Cajon. Sunshine Horton, a public-spirited community activist and El Cajon resident, summed up the sentiments of many who have been bullied or insulted by Kalasha when she told the council, "He's one of those people, when he leaves the room, he brightens it." Reporting for East County Magazine from El Cajon, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
The state is proposing to release Alvin Quarles, a serial rapist, in Hakumba Hot Springs. Quarles attacked victims at knife point while they were sleeping in their homes or hotel rooms, and sometimes forced their husbands or boyfriends to watch. Investigators believe he was responsible for over a dozen violent sexual assaults in San Diego County in the 1980s, before being convicted and imprisoned in 1989. A hearing on his proposed release will be held on October 12th at 9 a.m. in San Diego Superior Court Department 2204. The public can also submit comments via email before September 5th by emailing sdsafe@sdsheriff.org or by calling 858-594-3619. The Sheriff's Department and District Attorney are not responsible for the placement decision, which is made by the Department of State Hospitals and the Superior Court. Supervisor Diane Jacob has strenuously objected to Quarles' release. On Twitter, she called state officials callous and careless for targeting rural East County as a dumping ground for sexually violent predators. Quote, "Hakumba has already been forced to house at least two other predators over the years," she notes, adding, "He has no place in that town or any community. His only home should be a prison cell." Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Jonathan Getz.
This is Miriam Raftery with a weather report. The heat is on. For those who may still be skeptics on climate change, the National Weather Service in San Diego has released statistics on record-breaking heat this summer in our region. San Diego has experienced 31 straight days with low temperatures at or above 70 degrees. 15 days had minimum temperatures that tied or broke previous records. From July through August 26th was the warmest period on record at an average of 76.7 degrees, and August is on track to be the hottest ever on record at over 78 degrees. The ocean temperatures measured off Scripps Pier averaged 79.5 degrees, the warmest ever recorded off San Diego's shorelines. That's warmer than the average off Waikiki Beach in Hawaii. Now as for this week's weather, fire weather conditions continue with low humidity, warm weather, and gusty winds in our mountain and desert areas.
This is East County Magazine's People Power, profiling local people making a positive difference in our community and our world.
This is Jonathan Goetz with East County Magazine's People Power Report. Your life can change at the drop of a dime, Lisa Ford told a standing room only crowd of more than 400 people packed at the Alpine Community Center on August 18th for a fundraiser to help survivors of the West Fire. She was one of 34 people who lost her home in the July wildfire. Ford was away when the fire began and learned of it when her daughter texted her a cell phone image of her mobile home in flames. I just buckled at the knees, she recalled, adding that the impact is still devastating. Despite those losses, she reflects, I'm very happy and blessed that the community is coming together, adding, it's really helped me spiritually to realize that there are wonderful people out there, at least in Alpine. Another family with 5 children had prepared for evacuation, with important belongings carefully set aside to take with them in case of fire. But they were away from home and lost everything. CBS 8 weatherman and lifestyle reporter Sean Stiles co-moderated the forum with Lorraine Phillips from Alpine Kiwanis. Stiles served as auctioneer, encouraging the crowd to bid up on items ranging from flags flown over the U.S. Capitol to a vacation at the New Willows Resort at Viejas in Alpine. Barona and Saquon also donated major prizes. When a woman bid $1,100 for dinner cooked up by Alpine firefighters at the hottest place in town, the fire station, Stiles coaxed a fire official into offering up a second dinner for another bidder who promptly pledged $1,200. Viejas filled a table at the event, as did other local organizations. Elected officials included Assemblyman Randy Vopel and members of the Grossmont Healthcare District Board of Directors. Former Congressman Duncan Hunter Sr., who lost his own home in the 2003 Cedar Fire, was also present. Descanso Junction served up dinner and also donated 45 extra pounds of roasted tri-tip for the auction, with 15 pounds of it purchased by a bidder who donated it to the firefighters. Miss Alpine and her court sold raffle tickets for the cause. Guests also bid on silent auction prizes, ranging from a handmade quilt to autographed Padres memorabilia. Roger Gray, director and treasurer of the Alpine Community Foundation, a nonprofit in charge of the fundraising, said despite losses suffered by the community, we're grateful to the firefighters and sheriffs, our first responders, drawing applause. Gray explained that how to spend the funds will be determined by the community recovery team, which was started after the 2003 firestorms to help identify and fill gaps. Between insurance, help from government agencies, and full recovery for communities, the group will allocate funds based on who has the greatest needs. Donations poured in, large and small. Barron's Market presented a $5,000 check to help the fire survivors. Coldwell Bankers and Modern Woodsmen each gave checks for $2,500. A hairdresser donated over $2,000, half of her July earnings. A little girl who won a jar filled with $25 worth of coins at another event donated it to help the West Fire survivors. The total revenues from the event may take several weeks to tally, says Lori Bledsoe, Alpine Sun editor, who helped organize the successful event in just 3 weeks. But the number was clearly in the tens of thousands or more. Like a phoenix rising from the ashes, Alpine will rebuild, thanks to the generosity of its residents and people from across East County who came to help those in need. If you would like to help, donations can be sent to the Alpine Community Foundation at 2065 Arnold Way, Suite 103 in Alpine, 91901, or deposited at any California bank and trust location and deposited in the Alpine Community Foundation account.
The annual Anza Borrego Desert Photography Contest is now accepting entries through December 1st. The theme is the unique and natural beauty of the Anza Borrego Desert State Park, and all photos must be taken within the state park boundaries. You can get complete rules and submit digital photos at theabf.org/photocontest. Entries are being accepted in these six categories: plants, animals, landscapes, people enjoying the Anza Borrego Desert State Park, black and white photography, and cell phone photography. Winners will receive ribbons as well as a one-year gift membership in the Anza Borrego Foundation. And again, for more information, you can visit theabf.org/photocontest.
A plane that departed Gillespie Field in El Cajon last Wednesday crashed in the mountains near Descanso, killing both people on board. 77-year-old David Allen Derby of Santee was an experienced pilot who had been flying for the past 15 years. The plane was owned by his company, Three Point Partners, Inc. Ryan Mitchell Willis of San Diego, a passenger, was also killed. A search commenced after the plane lost radio contact. Radar from the State Office of Emergency Services showed a steep descent, helping to narrow the search field. The wreckage was found on Thursday, near Tool Springs and Conejo Grade Road, east of the El Capitan Reservoir, the Sheriff's Department reported. The National Transportation Safety Board and the Federal Aviation Administration are investigating the cause of the crash. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
This is Miriam Raftery with a health alert. Virulent Newcastle disease, a highly contagious disease that has wreaked havoc on California poultry in recent decades, has been found in four Southern California counties. Although it hasn't shown up yet here in San Diego County, authorities are urging backyard bird owners to be on the lookout for symptoms of this deadly disease. San Diego County Agricultural Commissioner Ha Dang is urging bird owners to call the California Department of Food and Agriculture's Sick Bird Hotline at 866-922-BIRD. That number again is 866-922-BIRD if they notice birds coughing, sneezing, experiencing nasal discharge, muscle tremors, drooping wings, diarrhea, stiffness, twisting of the head or neck, or sudden death, all symptoms of Newcastle. Newcastle disease is not harmful to people, although in rare cases, people who are exposed to it may develop mild cases of fever or eye inflammation. You cannot contract it by eating infected poultry. It has not been found in any commercial poultry in California recently. However, since May, state and federal agricultural officials have found the disease in backyard poultry in Los Angeles, Riverside, San Bernardino, and Ventura counties. Because virulent Newcastle disease is so contagious and so dangerous to bird flocks, and because there is no cure for the infected birds, backyard flocks that have been found so far have been quarantined and many birds euthanized. Chickens are particularly susceptible to virulent Newcastle disease, but all birds, domestic and wild ones, can contract it. A major outbreak of virulent Newcastle disease in the 1970s in commercial chickens in California caused nearly 12 million birds to be destroyed, cost taxpayers $56 million, and increased poultry product costs for consumers. In 2003, an 11-month outbreak spread from backyard birds to commercial poultry in Southern California and prompted emergency declarations in San Diego, among other counties, costing $161 million, and it ended up with more than 3 million birds dead or euthanized. Bird owners can help protect their birds by following some simple steps. Make sure anyone working around birds washes their hands and scrubs their boots before and after entering a poultry area. Clean and disinfect tires and equipment before moving them off property. And isolate any birds returning from shows for 30 days before placing them back in with the rest of the flock.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Valerie Watts
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This week's Destination East County includes the Barona Powwow, Julian Grape Stomp, and Descanso Deep Pit Barbecue.
Plus, we'll have a preview of coming attractions, including the Saquon Powwow, Ramona's Grape Stomp, raspberry picking and farm tours in Julian, and our own East County Dining Club at Four Penny House in La Mesa.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
The annual Barona Powwow will be held August 31st through September 2nd at the Barona Sports Park on the Barona Reservation in Lakeside. Native American dancers and drummers from across the nation come to participate in competitions at the powwow, where you can also find a wide variety of Native American crafts, jewelry, and foods available for purchase. For more information, you can visit barona-nsn.gov and click on the 2018 Powwow button at the top.
The Julian Grape Stomp Festa invites you to kick off your shoes and squish grapes beneath your feet at the 22nd annual event on September 1st from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the Mangini Winery in Julian. Taste wines from multiple wineries as well as food and drinks from a variety of local establishments. There will also be live music, bocce ball, and dancing at this party to remember, as well as a VIP event complete with pig roast. For tickets and more information, check visitjulian.com and click on their calendar to find the September 1st Grape Stomp.
The Descanso Deep Pit Barbecue continues a tradition of ground cooking that Native Americans have done for thousands of years. After days of prep using cords of oak firewood and locally grown beef, the pit is ignited, meat wrapped and placed in the pit, and then, 28 hours later, the tasty beef will be enjoyed on Sunday, September 2nd from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. The Descanso Deep Pit Barbecue takes place at Our Lady of Light Parish in Descanso, in a tradition begun there back in 1937. Descanso is a small town located about 45 minutes east of San Diego. The 81st Annual Deep Pit Barbecue and Community Fair is open to the community with foods available for purchase. The festivities also include vendors, live music by the Bushwhackers Band, dancing, kids' games, a cash drawing, and a beer garden, as well as Deep Pit Barbecue beef, side dishes, and pies available for purchase.
Now for a preview of coming attractions.
El Cajon's Dinner and a Concert events continue each Friday night from 6 to 8 p.m. at Prescott Promenade on Main Street in downtown El Cajon. Bring a picnic dinner or arrive early and dine at a local restaurant. Bring a receipt from participating downtown restaurants to enter a prize drawing. Concerts coming up include an Elvis tribute by Scott Bruce on September 7th, a Tom Petty tribute by the Petty Breakers on September 14th, Sirens Crush playing modern pop and dance music on September 21st, and the Mighty Untouchables for the season finale on September 28th.
The Saquon Band of the Kumeyaay Nation will host its annual powwow September 7th, 8th, and 9th at the Powwow Grounds in front of the Saquon Casino on Dehesa Road. That's located on the Saquon Reservation in unincorporated El Cajon. Visitors can watch dancers in full regalia participate in competitions, savor foods such as fry bread tacos, and shop for Native American crafts at the three-day powwow.
The Ramona Grape Stomp invites you to come squish grapes in a stomping competition, taste local wines, bid on silent auction items, and shop at more than 40 local crafters and vendors. The Ramona Grape Stomp will be held September 8th from noon to 5 p.m. at the Ramona Outdoor Community Center. For the juicy details, you can visit ramonagrapestomp.com.
The 49th annual Julian Music Festival will celebrate the end of summer at Mangini Winery in Julian on Saturday, September 15th from 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. This year's festival will feature a variety of musical genres, including Americana, contemporary jazz, folk, and more. For advanced tickets and a full listing of performers, visit julianmusicfestival.com.
The raspberries at Julian Farm and Orchard are ready to be picked. Blackberries are almost ready, and then corn and pumpkins will follow. You can enjoy raspberry picking and farm tours each Saturday from 12 noon to 6 p.m., from September 15th through October 13th. The farm is located on Highway 78 on the Santa Isabel side of the highway next to Winola Pizza and Julian Mountain Bakery. Julian Farm and Orchard is owned by the same folks who operate the Julian Mining Company. You can also enjoy tractor-drawn hay rides, barnyard visits, and shopping at the farmer's wife's store, in addition to plucking berries and other crops on weekends starting September 15th. Weekday visits are also available by appointment.
The East County Dining Club invites you to their next dinner, which will be held at the Fourpenny House Scottish Restaurant and Brewery in La Mesa on Wednesday, September 26th at 6:30 p.m. So stop on by to try some authentic Scottish cuisine, choosing from a menu that includes such specialties as bangers and mash, Scottish mussels, crofter's pie, fresh salmon, Yorkshire wraps, artisanal cheeses, Scottish paella, curry roasted cauliflower, and bread pudding. Fourpenny House will donate 20% of proceeds to benefit East County Magazine and our East County Wildfire and Emergency Alerts. There will also be prize drawings. RSVP to reserve space at 619-698-7617 or email editor@eastcountymagazine.org. You can check out the full menu at fourpennyhouse.com.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more in the calendar and events section at our website, eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around East County!
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show. If you would like to be the media, here's your opportunity. We're looking for some more talented volunteers for our East County Magazine radio show. So if you've got radio experience or just a great voice, or if you'd like to get experience writing scripts or special reports for the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 619-698-7617 or send an email to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We're your community media, bringing you news from our region that reflects the public interest, not special interests.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
A bill to restore net neutrality in California now goes to the full state assembly after it passed a key committee on Wednesday, unscathed. In June, the Communications and Conveyance Committee sparked an uproar when it eliminated some key protections, forcing lawmakers to restore them. Evan Greer with the group Fight for the Future says he supports SB 822 because it prevents internet service providers from taking action to favor some websites or work against others.
So that's protections against blocking or censoring websites, throttling or degrading content, and cutting paid prioritization deals, which are scams where your internet provider gets paid by a company to deliver their content to you faster than someone else's.
SB 822 also would ban discriminatory zero-rating schemes where the ISP controls what you see by offering free access to content it's being paid to show you, but creating a higher-paid tier for access to an uncurated, open internet. If the bill becomes state law, the federal government could sue to overturn it. FCC Chairman Ajit Pai has argued that the rules were unnecessary and stifled innovation. Greer notes that SB 822 also would restore the complaint process, which was lost when the FCC repealed the Obama-era net neutrality rules.
Now that we have a chairman at the FCC, the former Verizon lawyer, who has basically made it clear that he's okay with the ISPs doing whatever they want, they're clearly emboldened to abuse their power even further.
The vote comes a day after news broke that Verizon recently slowed down internet access to a crawl for the Santa Clara Fire Department's mobile command vehicle during the recent mega fires, saying the supposedly unlimited data plan really had a built-in cap. The company now has vowed to make an exception in time of emergency. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm interviewing Alan Mindel, author of The Closer, a baseball love story about an aging minor league pitcher who finally moves up to the majors. Like his protagonist, my guest has reinvented himself, and he's a motivational speaker on the topic of life begins at 70. Welcome, Alan. It's a pleasure having you on Bookshelf.
It's wonderful to be here, Raina. Thank you.
Let's start with your novel, The Closer. It's been called an existential love story. What does that mean, and what's the premise of the book, and what kind of meaning do you believe that readers take from reading it?
Well, Raina, existential love story refers to the fact that my protagonist, Terry Landers, without really realizing it, is searching for meaning. He thinks that if he makes the major leagues, and he's a long-time minor league relief pitcher, he thinks that if he makes the major leagues, then his life will be complete. But what happens is that once he does make the majors, he meets a family in distress. That's where the love story comes in, and finds meaning so that he becomes the closer, not only on the baseball pitching mound, but also in life.
Okay, so the sports, it's really like a metaphor, as well as the reality of the sport. Is that correct?
That is correct. It is.
And I know that you're known for your never-give-up attitude. In the last few years, you have won 6 gold medals for sprinting in San Diego Senior Olympics. How has the attitude affected your approach to writing and to publishing this book?
Well, very simple. I didn't give up.
Right.
It actually, I started this novel 15 years ago.
Really?
And ironically, it took my main character, Terry, 15 years to make the majors, and it took me 15 years to find a publisher because I declined to self-publish this book. So, and when it hit because not only did I get one publisher making an offer, but I got two.
Now, was that a coincidence, the 15 years, 15 years?
It was very coincidental, to say the least. I didn't plan it. I didn't plan to spend 15 mm-hmm. years locating a publisher, nor did Terry plan to spend 15 years in the right. minor leagues.
So how do you keep yourself from giving up?
I think that as writers, we just work at it. And the idea is, and actually I have written 3 novels, and I decided at one point it's time to get published. So I took my pen and paper away from myself and focused on getting published and mm-hmm. Wrote letters and sought out agents and so on and so forth so that I was able to make a hit. Forgive the pun.
Oh, I didn't even catch that one. Well, let's go back to the character Terry Landers. Now, his struggles in both baseball and in life, are they semi-autobiographical, or...?
I think the idea of nothing comes easy, and I'm old school in the sense that I believe work pays off, and mm-hmm. keep at it, and never give up, and so on and so forth. And even with my Senior Olympics success, the idea mm-hmm. of never giving up and training and so on and so forth. That's kind of the way I've always lived my life, Raina.
And is baseball a love of yours? I mean, why baseball? Why did you choose baseball for the metaphor of this story?
That's a great question. The reality is that all my novels, the other two, which now will be published thanks to The Closer, are really fantasies. I was a baseball player in college. I played at University of California, Berkeley, and I always wanted to be a professional baseball player. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't quite good enough, even though I had a tryout with the California Angels at the time. They were known as the California Angels. They wanted to make me into a switch hitter. Mm-hmm. I couldn't quite accomplish that. And so 50 years later or so, I wrote the novel, The Closer, and put myself in it. I was a center fielder, at Cal Berkeley, I became a knuckleballing relief pitcher in the closer.
Oh, what fun.
So it was fun.
So you got to play and fantasize and relive.
Exactly. In fact, I took an incident that occurred in college and completely reworked it so that it worked out successfully. Every kid dreams of coming up with the bases loaded and two outs and his team behind three runs, and he's going to fantasize his hitting a home run and winning the game and so on and so forth. Well, I reversed that and made myself a pitcher. The bases were loaded and nobody was out, and the tying run was on third, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, I won't tell you what happened, but I think you can read between the lines.
Well, how therapeutic you get to rewrite history.
Exactly, exactly.
Your favorite theme of aging happily no matter what, you know, I'm sure it resonates for a lot of people. Writers and readers, we're all aging. And you live what you preach. You know, your debut as a published author at 72. What are some other ways that you stay active and seize the day here in San Diego?
Thank you for asking that question. Actually, I train virtually every day for the Senior Olympics. I'm a sprinter, and I was lucky enough to win 4 gold medals in the 2012 Senior Olympics as a sprinter, and so I regularly train. I also dance around town. And in addition, I tour guide for a tour company that I founded many years ago. So I'm across the board, to say the least.
You keep yourself active.
I do. It's a lot of fun, too. And the book has been really, really, really just very inspiring to get out and talk to people about it and so on and so forth.
Great. One more question, Alan. What's next? Can you give us an idea of the next book and when we might expect to see it?
The next book is called The B-Team. It's a horse racing novel. It is about a one-eyed racehorse that winds up in the Kentucky Derby. His biggest fan is a boy, a young boy, also with only one sighted eye. So there's a connection there. I was thinking about publishing it prior to the Kentucky Derby, so possibly early next spring. However, I'm having so much fun promoting the closer that I'm in no rush to go through the process of finalizing that.
Now, will this be a young adult book? Or
it sounds like one, but it isn't.
Okay.
Because not only do we have the racehorse and the boy, but there are also characters at various stages in their lives, and they are all at kind of critical stages in their lives. And so the book becomes kind of a catharsis and a kind of a getting together of all of them. It's a nice story, if I say so
myself.
Sounds
like one.
Thank you.
Look forward to reading it.
Thank you.
Our time is up, Alan, but thanks again for joining us.
Raina, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
For more information on Alan Mindell and his work, please visit his Facebook page at www.facebook.com/Alan.Mindell, and that's MINDELL. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
Each year, the town of Julian comes alive with the sounds of music, fiddle music, along with banjos, guitars, mandolins, and mountain dulcimers at the annual Julian Fiddle and Pickin' Contest. Recently, we're seeing a revival of interest in the art of fiddling and, more broadly, a renaissance in traditional music both regionally and nationally. Avery Ellisman is the district representative from the California State Old Time Fiddlers Association, which started 40 years ago. Locally, there are now around 60 members on a mission to enhance appreciation for and involvement in old-time fiddling. He says there's been a huge bump in sales of acoustic instruments nationally, according to the National Association of Music Manufacturers. And locally, two major nationally known musical instrument manufacturers, Taylor Guitar and Deering Banjo, are both adding staff here in East County. Baby boomers have the money and the time to rediscover the joys of just fiddling around, a pastime that evokes bygone days when life was simpler and the pace of living was slower, with time to listen, learn, and make some music of your own. Ellisman says of fiddling, this is the music of the people, adding, One person sits with and teaches another. Fiddling is most prevalent in rural areas, also a popular pastime to while away time during inclement weather. It's what people did for entertainment, kids, long before the advent of radio, TV, or the Internet. Ellisman says, I consider music to be one of the highest forms of human celebration, a celebration of life. Fiddle music is infectious in a very positive way. The world needs more of that. Though played on the same instrument as a violin, he adds, fiddle music calls you to dance. Julian's old-time fiddle and pickin' contest has its roots in a Julian banjo and fiddle competition that started over 60 years ago. For many years, it was run by the Julian Lions Club. But as the club's membership aged, interest in hosting competitions waned. The focus shifted to entertainment, and eventually the event dwindled. Ellisman runs the Julian Family Fiddle Camp each spring to teach fiddling skills to the next generation. So he asked the Lions to partner with his group and the State Old Time Fiddlers Association, but he says the Lions declined. So Ellisman turned to the community instead, asking the local Chamber of Commerce and local merchants to support a new and revitalized competition. The community agreed, and the competition has grown ever since. It's now a 2-day event, encouraging visitors to spend the night and help boost Julian's local economy. Ellisman calls Julian the jewel of East County, noting that the event draws people from across the West and as far away as Alaska. The first modern-day Julian Fiddle and Pickin contest was held in 2014. Fiddling refers to bowed instruments, while picking is for unbowed instruments such as the guitar, mandolin, banjo, and mountain dulcimer. Ellisman notes proudly, "We have kids from age 6 up to age 86, and they're playing together. It's a wonderful way to bridge the generations." Before, Julian's events were not traditional fiddle contests, but now they are. Each competitor must perform 3 elements, a hoedown, a waltz, and a piece of the musician's choice, such as a jig, a polka, or something else. Competitors can compete in age-based categories or in an open competition that any age can enter. The open competition is considered the premier event, with bragging rights for winners who beat all comers. At the 2016 competition, Ellisman's 16-year-old daughter, Shira Ellisman, competed for the first time in the open competition category. Early in the day, youngsters competed, and then in the afternoon, the open picking competition was held, followed by the open fiddling division. Announcer Dwight Warden explained that the history of fiddling goes back to the 1700s in America. Thomas Jefferson was an avid fiddler. Fiddling gained popularity again in the 1900s, thanks to Henry Ford, who liked fiddling so much he had fiddle competitions in all of his dealerships. But then fiddling events shifted to hokum and showfests, with people playing fiddles behind their heads or beating on instruments with broom straws, Warden recalls. More recently, the pendulum has shifted back to traditional fiddling styles that popularized the genre to begin with. In the 1950s, a major competition in Idaho put the focus back on musicianship, and the modern fiddle competition was born. All 3 pieces must be played within just 4 minutes, and no hokum is allowed. Shira Ellisman opened up the fiddling competition playing Sally Johnson for her hoedown entry, followed by Morning Star Waltz and Don't Let Your Gal Go Down. And here's a little bit of what this talented fiddler sounded like. The local teenager's teacher is Luke Price, a graduate of the Berklee School of Music, who is also a 2-time winner of the National Fiddle Championship. After Shira was finished, the announcer exclaimed, "She's got a future ahead of her!" The competition was stiff, with many other talented performers. After the contest, 3 of the fiddle judges also performed, Matthew Hartz and Luke Price, both multiple National Fiddle Competition winners, and Mabel Vogt from Idaho. Hartz told the crowd, "I'm excited to be here and come before a group that's so supportive. For us to carry this music and art form forward, we need your support," he added, as some in the crowd offered up donations or purchased CDs. Hartz performed Festival Waltz and Shuck in the Bush to a wildly enthusiastic crowd. Here's a little excerpt of this dual national champion's performance. Finally, the long-awaited announcement of the awards winners came. First, the junior winners were announced, and then the open competitors. Tom Dillon of La Mesa, who plays with a bluegrass band, took first place in the open picking category. Then, the open fiddling winner was announced, and Shira Ellison claimed the top prize, beaming from ear to ear. Afterwards, her teacher, Luke Price, shared with us how he first got interested in music. "My dad started me on guitar and banjo at 3 years old," he said, in between signing autographs from his fans. "I started classical violin at age 8. It took me 2 years before I started exploring the fiddle genre." He said, adding, "It took me 2 years before I started exploring the fiddle genre." He's come a long way since then, passing along the skills and joy of old-time fiddling to a new generation, including Shira Ellison, as she commences her own musical journey. You can learn fiddling and picking skills locally by signing up through julianfiddlecamp.com and listen to the talented local and national competitors at the next Julian Fiddle and Pickin' Contest by visiting sandiegofiddler.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, this is Miriam Raftery. The East County Magazine Show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine Radio Show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.